The State Department suffers from a lack of leadership career opportunities. The American Academy of Diplomacy says an overbalance of political appointees in the senior ranks of the agency means they're only focused on short-term goals. Ambassador Ron Newman is president of the Academy. He's served in Iraq and Afghanistan, among a number of other high-level appointments in the State Department. And the Academy has a proposal to reintroduce career employees into the top ranks of the foreign and civil services at the Department of State. Ambassador, it's terrific to talk to you on the program again. Thank you for joining me today. This report says America's diplomacy, the front line of our defenses, is in trouble. Almost no career officers serve in the most senior state positions, while short-term political appointees penetrate ever deeper into the system. What's the danger of the structure of the State Department in that way? Thanks for coming on, sir.
Thanks for having me, Francis. There's no question that our elected officials have to be the ones that ultimately make policy decisions. They need to be informed by people who have worked overseas in the countries concerned, people who have personal knowledge of and contact with leaders. If you don't have all of that in the system, then you're working on a theoretical basis without touching reality. And appropriately, you should have people who represent the guidance. But you need a mix, and right now we don't have much of a mix. If you look at the top nine positions underneath the Secretary of State, which is eight undersecretaries and the counselor of the department, you find that seven of the nine are non-career appointees. And of the two career people, one deals with management but not with political-level policy, and the other is at the bottom of the heap.
You make a distinction and a reference throughout this work, and we have a link to the work at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth ambassador, to the Foreign Service and the Civil Service. For folks who haven't served in the State Department and aren't familiar with the difference, explain the difference, please.
Okay. State Department has two personnel systems. The Civil Service, which is basically like the Civil Service and the rest of the U.S. government. The Foreign Service is a separate service. Officers come in by competitive examination. They have to be promoted in certain periods or they're out. They are commissioned officers like military officers. They have an oath. They have a requirement to serve, not only serve overseas, but to go where told to go. They are the ones who staff all our embassies and consulates abroad. Meaning that they also have a requirement to go to places that are hard and dangerous and either leave their families or move their families. Those are not requirements of the civil service.
You write about several different issues, one in particular for each of those, and we'll take them in turn. The Foreign Service, this report says, lacks the professional education and standards to meet its current heavy responsibilities and to create its necessary future senior leaders. Is this a static problem, sir, or is this one that's been developing in the Academy's view over a period of time?
It's been developing for a number of reasons. One is the necessary expansion of the Foreign Service, so that at this point, because it was held back for a long time and then leaped forward, you have two-thirds of America's Foreign Service officers, diplomats overseas, have less than 10 years in the service. This requires a much more precise application of professional education and training. When I came up in the service, it was a smaller service, and we worked for a longer time, which wasn't always great for promotion, but you worked, you had a longer apprenticeship, very close to very senior people. With the current structure of so many people not having had much time in the service, you can't make that informal system work well. The other problem is that by virtue of a great deal of effort, the Foreign Service takes in very diversified group of people, not all of them young even, diversified ethnically, diversified geographically, diversified in gender. But the result of recruiting a diversified workforce is you're not just recruiting people out of Eastern Ivy League schools who plan to be in the Foreign Service, and so many of them were not studying that kind of work for their degrees, and so you now need to give them the academic intellectual underpinning to fill that hole.
Regarding the professional education aspect of that, is it a capability problem that the State Department's training doesn't match well with the needs of the job, or is it a scale problem where there just aren't enough seats or spaces to get enough people through?
No, it's the former, and it's because it doesn't have the resources to do that kind of training. So that the result is that the entry-level program is about 7 weeks, and it's mostly, it's all about where things are, how to get overseas, structure the department. It does not, cannot possibly have the time to provide an in-depth training of the kind, education of the kind that we think is necessary.
It sounds like they're learning logistics and operational stuff, and not nearly as much about how to. I'm apologize if the phrase is inadequate, but not as much on how to be a diplomat and how to represent the United States.
That's exactly correct. They're told you'll get that when you get overseas, but when they get overseas, they may well be in embassies where there are only one or two senior officers who just can't. With the best will in the world and a lot of hours, simply can't stretch to mentoring and coaching everybody in the old-fashioned way.
I think folks like myself forget that not every embassy assignment is Paris. The civil service, report says...
I've done three wars in my diplomatic career and one as an infantry officer.
And I understand that, and we've had a chance to discuss that on occasion, and I appreciate the reminder that the life that most people think of Foreign Service officers is not the life actually led. This report says civil service is mired in an outdated system with limited coherent career mobility. Now, you mentioned that the civil service is similar to the situation with the civil service at other federal agencies. Are the problems that you detail in this work similar to issues at other federal agencies, or are they peculiar to the State Department for one reason or another?
Some of the problems, I think, are general. There are other reports out about the civil service, so I know we're not the only ones who think they have some problems. Some may be particular to the Foreign Service. I'm not sure. One of the problems in the Foreign Service, in the State Department, is that very good civil service people can go up fairly high, but then there's no place for them to go. There's no career path. One of the recommendations we make is that the control of civil service, senior civil service positions is what we're really focused on, come out of the individual bureaus and be managed centrally so that there's a much bigger pool for people to move in and have a career path. And let me just stress, Francis, that a top-quality civil service is just as necessary to the State Department as a top-quality foreign service. American security depends in large part on good diplomacy, which requires a strong State Department, and that has to rest on both a strong foreign service and a strong civil service.
So now that we understand the distinction, this statement jumps out at the page a little bit more at me, Ambassador. Some State Department officials, this report says, seem intent on nullifying the Foreign Service Act of 1980 and its merit-based personnel system by bureaucratically seeking to blend the foreign and civil services. You've kind of touched around the edge of why that's potentially dangerous, but explain in greater detail why you think that's a problem, sir.
Our contention is that one of the two services needed to be strong is the Foreign Service, and that requires the kind of professional development we were talking about. What is happening is that is being undercut from a variety of directions. There is too many of the jobs which are needed to train younger Foreign Service officers how to manage in Washington and the famous interagency process are no longer available because they've been converted to civil service jobs, which is not a knock on the civil service, but when they have a job like that, they don't move. We're actually proposing some changes that would give the civil service actually a greater rotation ability at the senior levels in return for some greater responsibility and jobs. When you start taking away more and more senior positions and now politicizing down lower below the senior positions into the deputy assistant secretaries, you're also removing both career opportunities. And at the same time, there are games played with how you deal with positions between foreign service and civil service. There are civil service people who have gone overseas as ambassadors and should have because they were well qualified. But it's one thing to send a well-qualified person to a particular job. It's another thing to say one service has a responsibility to accept danger and rotation and movement, but we're going to cherry-pick among the jobs in the interest of making everybody feel good.
The recommendations that you make here are three major ones: centralizing management of the SES in the department's HR bureau rather than the regional and functional bureaus. Why would that be a benefit, Ambassador?
It just enlarges the pool of jobs so that SES people would have more ability to move up by moving over between jobs.
The second one we've touched on briefly, establishing orientation and expanded professional education and training for the civil service. And the third one is establishing a new option for civil service employees of a career policy program. What would that look like?
Okay, the base you need to understand is 20 years ago, the civil service could be looked at as simply a support service to the diplomats. That's not true anymore. We have so many technical fields, from arms control to climate to telecommunications, in which senior civil servants play an absolutely critical role. So you now have a different kind of constituency within the civil service. About 700 jobs in the civil service are designated as what's called foreign affairs officers. We're proposing that on a voluntary basis, I wouldn't force anybody, that you establish what we would call an exempted service within the civil service, which would, on the one hand, be able to bid on up to 10% of domestic foreign service jobs, as well as civil service jobs, would be able to rotate regularly, but in return would accept a change in how they're ranked and a requirement to rotate and a requirement to have up or out promotion the same way the foreign service does.
What are the potential roadblocks here politically or legislatively as you would try to move something like this? It would have to obviously go through Congress, and then the president would have to sign it. What are the potential objections that you would be prepared to deal with?
Well, I suppose the largest will be that it's new, and people will be resistant to that. I don't know that there, you'll have to see how the civil service reacts to this idea. We've developed it in contact with senior civil servants, people who've been in there. And what we're proposing would be a voluntary service. I don't know yet how, we've only been, what's been out 24 hours, we'll have to see how people react. So obviously there would have to be a big enough constituency that likes the idea to go forward with it. The Office of Personnel Management, OPM, would have to consent to it, get out of the way. And there's people who say that they'll never do it, but I don't know that you can find that out without trying. I don't think this breaks down as a political issue between Democrats and Republicans, that kind of thing. The State Department management itself would have to sit down and think this through and think out the details. That may be the hardest thing, not because they can't do it, but because they're short-staffed and they have so many people so many issues coming at them, they're drinking out of a fire hose. It's difficult for them to find time to review the system or a piece of it, but that would have to be part of the job.
Ambassador, I appreciate your time to come on and talk about this, and congratulations to the Academy on completing this.
Thank you very much, and we're happy to deal with questions or come back or whatever.